Hey guys, afternoon.
This is Bill Castro.
That would have been Josh.
Can we just talk about how good these kids are in the movie real quick? Because I'm still in awe about that. How these, I'm seeing these young kids just be light years ahead. And I'm like, do you guys see that too? And just like are shocked.
Stealing scenes from us, we're a little bit jealous.
Right?
I think the kids were great. Lasse has a great way of working with kids. He lets them do their lines and then just keeps them repeating their lines until they kind of, so often they forget them, and then they just become little kids again and say whatever's on their mind. I think that's part of Lasse's process. This is Nick talking here, but I'll let Julianne and Josh expound on that.
It was literally the greatest experience I've had working on a movie, for many reasons, but for, for one in particular, it was because I got to work with kids for the first time. Josh always says that Christmas without kids is not as fun, and I have to go with that. I agree. And so making this film wouldn't have been as fun, I don't think, without them. They have such an innocence about and fun about what they're doing. You know, they get up every day excited that they're going to have the greatest summer playing make-believe, you know?
Yeah,
it was important for me too to make sure that we had a real connection before we ever started shooting. So I met with Mimi, and her mom drove up from Raleigh, North Carolina for a day, and we went to the beach and had a picnic and made sandcastles and boogie boards and all kinds of stuff like that, which really helped when it came time to shoot because they felt like they knew me, and we really just had a great time. And there's something about having that age on a set because they just truly have a spontaneity and an innocence about them that you can't help but to sort of channel the kid in you, and that's our main job, was just to make them feel as comfortable as possible, and as a result they ended up out acting us most of the time.
Well, I was gonna say it shows until you said that last part, but you guys all did good.
Oh thank you.
All right, so Nicholas, to you, I got a couple for you. What did you set out to write? Because, you know, as a reviewer, we can only speculate, and it's only my opinion, but it's kind of like a rare opportunity where I get to say, like, all right, what were you going for with this novel?
Yeah, it was a romantic thriller. That's what it was. And they're actually very challenging to pull off, because as soon as you start adding thriller elements to any story, whether it's on film or within the context of a novel or even a short story, there's most often the tendency that thriller element will overshadow every other thing you're trying to do, including building up a romantic, a believable, patient, romantic journey between two people who are getting to know each other. So the key with this was to allow the relationship to develop, and you keep the thriller, the spark of the thriller alive through mystery, and then once you really have begun to root for the characters and root for them to be together, well, then you switch it, and all of a sudden it is an edge of your seat thriller for the last 30, 40 minutes of that film.
All right. Now, you know, I have the editor to writer relationship. And sometimes you turn in an article and you wonder why the editor pulled out certain things. And, you know, you're on, what, your 10th or 11th movie that's been adapted, something like that?
I think it's number 8, number 9 is coming.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm foreshadowing. But, I mean, how much control do you have at this point in your career? I mean, are you on the set, or are you still like, oh my God, why'd they cut that out?
I have a lot of control, actually. I'm one voice in a room. Film is a collaborative process, and you have to understand that going in. You also have to understand that film is a very different medium than it's a novel. And so if you go in with those two sets and you've been around, I'm certainly one of the voices in the room when it comes to casting or the script. What we wanted to make, though, everybody, whether it was Josh or Julianne or Lasse or the studio or the other producers, Marty, all we all wanted was the best film we could possibly make. The novel has its life as a novel, and I'm very proud of the novel, and it's selling like crazy, and I couldn't be happier about that. Still, I want the film to stand on its own. I want to give people an opportunity to enjoy the story in a different medium. Kind of like if you see Lion King in the movie theater, then you go see Lion King on Broadway. It's different, but you can enjoy both if they're both done well for their particular medium. And that's what we're trying to do. And so I think Safe Haven succeeds as a film on every level that it was supposed to. It is, without question, terrifically acted romantic thriller that will have people talking about it on the way out of the theater.
All right, over to Josh. Now, this may seem kind of trivial, but for whatever reason, I want to talk about your haircut in the film. And I want to know how much thought went into that, or did any thought go into that?
Not a lot, yeah. Lots of thought went into that.
Shannon.
Does it really?
I had just finished a movie about 2 months earlier called Scenic Route, where I had a full-blown mohawk shaved all the way to the scalp on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have in this movie is the result of that mohawk.
Growing back.
And I was trying to grow it out as fast as I could, but, you know, there's only so much you can do.
I gotcha.
And so that's kind of where, you know, I wanted him to feel kind of shaggy, you know, beachy, lives in a fishing port, little fishing town, sleepy, doesn't really care, is working, you know, is taking care of his kids in his shop, and that's about it. They let me kind of do that, but, you know, they needed me to, I couldn't go completely Jack Sparrow on them. I had to spark it up a bit.
Okay.
So I don't know.
They also made you like make sure that you had no gray in your beard.
Yeah.
Alright.
Sorry.
Well, I don't have any gray.
I know. I was like, sorry, this just makes you feel old.
Alright.
Why?
So,
what are your thoughts on it?
Well, you know what? I was just looking.
I asked that question.
Because I've never asked it, I guess. I was just like, I wonder how much detail somebody reads. Like, you're reading the script, I'm like, does he see this guy? He's like, you know what? He has this type of haircut. That's what I'm going to go for. I guess that's
really? It's so funny. You're the first person of all the interviews we've done so far that's asked that question. And that was a bone of a lot of debate in the beginning when we first started shooting it. Like, I wanted this guy to be a bit rough around the edges. And you know, it was a bit of a battle, but they kind of let me mess him up a bit, I guess.
Yeah. What about the shyness? I mean, your guy is pretty shy. I mean, most guys are shy when they're trying to go after a girl they really have an interest in, right? But I don't know if you're a shy guy. We just met literally 5 minutes ago. Are you...
Well, Julianne is...
Go ahead.
Julianne is an intimidating girl.
I'm very intimidating.
So, you know, I think he was probably a bit shy because he hadn't really...
I'm kidding, by the way.
He hadn't really opened himself up to the idea of love for a while. You know, he's still dealing with the loss of his wife and probably hasn't dealt with it as well as he should have. And, you know, when she sort of drops in out of the sky, I think that he's a bit taken aback, doesn't really know what to do, hasn't dated or even thought about another girl for a long time. So I think that if there is any shyness there, that's the reason for it.
Yeah, I guess I was trying to get at, you know, were you a shy guy? Are you like me? Are you like every other 90% of the guys in the world that are always just nervous approaching a girl? Or are you one of the few lucky ones that are like, oh, you know what, I've had it for a while? And then you have to like...
I wish I could tell you that I had a lot of game, but I never really did.
No worries, man.
I guess I gave women a lot of credit, like they could see right through my BS, you know? So it was hard for me to come up with any one-liners for them, and because I knew that they would call me out. And so most of the time I just decided to
wait till they hit on you.
You know, I probably missed out on a lot growing up, but it ultimately paid off for me. I think my wife, that's how I met my wife.
Yeah, well, hindsight's 20/20, but don't look at it too often, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
All right, Julianne.
Yeah.
What about, all right, so you're an abused wife in this movie. Now, this is a simple stock question, but do you actually, like, try to like, put yourself in it? Like, what would happen if I was an abused wife? Or do you find women that have this happen to them and kind of, like, feed off what they've told you in their experiences?
Both. I went to women's shelters and got to speak to some amazing women and also counselors. But I also was able to pull some from some personal experiences from myself, from family members, friends. So I think it's not that it's anything like this is easy to do, but it was easier to be able to relate to Katie by pulling from those things. But you know, it's not an issue to take lightly. I think that unfortunately it's a pretty big deal in our life right now that still goes on. So for somebody watching this movie who might be going through the same thing, you know, there's a lot of responsibility to make sure that, you know, by the end of the movie they felt empowered and that they knew that they deserved a good life and to be loved. So that's what I was really drawn to too, you know, was being able to be that broken on the inside person, but, you know, knowing that I get to choose the life that I want to live and being around people who love you and support you, whether it's friends or family, that's what your safe place is, not necessarily the actual city or town or country that you live in. So, but yeah, that was a long-winded answer that didn't really answer the question.
Actually, no, you answer it, and that's good, because that's the only question I had for you. I was really just going to tell you that, look, you're doing a pretty good job in, the third movie I've seen you in, probably, and that's it. I felt bad I didn't really have more questions for you. I'm just like, all right, she's doing a good job, so let her off easy in the interview.
All right, well, thank you.
But,
I'm going to go back to doing my origami.
There you go. No, you guys should do. I would love to see a group of people do this, because usually you guys haven't asked this, and I'm... But, like, you know, they always ask, like, what'd you think of the movie? And it's like, well, I don't know yet. I'm still writing it, the review or whatever. But I think you guys should, like, turn the tables on us and start writing reviews of the interviewers you guys deal with on these press tours.
Hey, we'll wait to see what your review looks like.
Fair enough.
You might be our first victim.
I'll be happy to be your guinea pig if you guys actually take up that random idea I just had, but whatever.
If we have that, is that okay?
Josh, I don't think I can match the lawyer fees with you guys, so you guys can have it. I'm not going to put up a fight.
Okay.
But,
Support is that.
But thank you, guys. I'm good here. Good luck for the rest of the day. Hope you don't have to talk to too many more people.
All right.
Thank you,
Mr. Belcastro.
All right, Mr. Dumel. See ya.